The next speaker needs no introduction.
Thank you. So I have some announcements first, which I'll forget if I leave them till the end. Well, I guess this announcement's not going to happen. A strange thing. Oh, there we go. So there's an announcement about the dinner. So these are the people who have booked for the dinner on Thursday. And if anybody else would like to go, then they should book by noon today, apparently. And there's an announcement about lunch. So people who are resident for this workshop get their lunch from the main cafeteria at Churchill College, which is 5 minutes walk, maybe 3 minutes walk. And if anybody else would like to eat there, then they can pair at the cafeteria. I don't know what this one's about. This is just the program, isn't it? This is the change in the program
for Wednesday afternoon.
So Wednesday afternoon has changed. So there's been a cyclic permutation of the three speakers on Wednesday afternoon, so that Julius can have more time. The last speaker. So I'm talking about real zeros of chromatic and floor polynomials. So it kind of follows. I'm going to repeat some of the stuff that Alan said, I guess. So here's what I'll be talking about. So I'm going to start off. So Alan, I guess, started from the general and went to the particular, which is the way he looks at things. And I guess I look at things the other way around. So I'm starting off at chromatic polynomials and floor polynomials. And I'll end up giving another example of how the multivariate proof can simplify a complicated graph theoretic univariate proof. So I'll finish up by looking at the multivariate Tutte polynomial and using it to prove a result on chromatic polynomials. So I'll start off with arbitrary graphs and planar graphs. Planar triangulations and then graphs of bounded maximum degree, which is all stuff that Alan mentioned, I guess. And then I'd like to switch to floor polynomials of graphs, which are, for planar graphs, floor polynomials are dual to chromatic polynomials. But we'll see that they behave differently. So floor polynomials of general graphs seem to behave like chromatic polynomials of planar graphs. So they're much better behaved than chromatic polynomials of general graphs. So this is a theorem maybe we'll look at the next theorem as well. So this kind of says what happens to the roots of chromatic polynomials of general graphs, of arbitrary graphs. In some sense, it's a complete answer. So here's an artistic impression of the what happens to the chromatic polynomial of a general graph. So I should have used Q really for the variable, because Alan used Q, but it looks like I'm stuck with T. So this is the chromatic polynomial of J, so it counts the number of proper T vertex colorings of the graph. So let's suppose J is a graph VE. And let's suppose that G is 2 connected. And let's suppose it has an even number of vertices. Just so I can draw, I know what the picture looks like. So I think then the chromatic polynomial is going to look, I guess, something like this. This is 0, and this is 1, and this is some funny value, 32 over 27. So if we don't know it's token x, then we don't know, so it's a bit more complicated. So the sign, didn't want to do that, come back. That's what I want to do. So the sign for t negative is minus 1 to the n, where n's the number of vertices. There's a 0 at the origin, which has multiplicity the number of components of the graph. It's non-zero with sine minus 1 to the n plus the number of components between 0 and 1. So these things, I think, are contained in papers of Tutte, but they didn't really want to assign them to Tutte because they're very easy. Well, I should really say that chromatic polynomials were introduced by Birkhoff to study the four-color problem, four-color theorem. And he thought that maybe looking at a polynomial rather than looking at the discrete chromatic number would allow him to use analytic means to prove the four-color theorem. So up till now, this hasn't happened, unfortunately. So Birkhoff and Lewis, in fact, have results about chromatic polynomials of planar graphs, and I guess Tutte was one of the first ones to look at chromatic polynomials of arbitrary graphs. So the next point we look at is what happens at t equals 1. So Douglas Woodall showed that the multiplicity of the root at t equals 1 is the number of blocks in the graph. So they're the number of maximal two connected subgraphs. So here I'm assuming my graph is two connected, so there's only one block, so we have a simple root at 1. And then, so I got into this, it was actually Douglas Woodall that got me into the zero distributions of chromatic polynomials. And after talking to him about his results on the zero distribution of chromatic polynomials of plane triangulations, I went away thinking, well, what happens if a graph is not a plane triangulation? Can we say anything past 1? And I managed to prove this strange result that there are no zeros in the interval 1, 32 over 27. And I also constructed a family of graphs whose chromatic roots converge to 32 over 27. So a chromatic root is a root of the chromatic polynomial. So in some sense, 32 over 7 is it really is, we can't go epsilon past 32 over 27. And then Carsten Thomason showed that in fact, you can't go anywhere after 32 over 27. So after 32 over 27, the chromatic roots are dense in the whole interval up to infinity. So this solves a problem, I guess, of Ron Reid. I think Ron Reid asked to try and determine the behavior of chromatic roots of graphs. And then this, putting it all together, it answers Ron Reid's question. I guess this is an example of the question that I asked Alan at the end of his talk. Maybe I should go back a second. So I'd like to show you the family of graphs that I came up with that converge to. So these have chromatic roots converging to 32 over 27.
Real chromatic roots.
Real chromatic roots.
Excuse me, what is the degree of the polynomial in terms of this data?
The degree of the polynomial is the number of vertices. That's right. Okay. So we have we start with a triangle and a fixed edge E, and then we use something called a diamond substitution. I didn't call it diamond substitution in those days. So we replace each edge, which is not equal to A, by a diamond. So it's a cycle of length 4. And then we iterate. So now each edge, which is not A, we replace by a diamond. And as we go on, the chromatic polynomial of the triangle is t minus 1, t minus 2, so it's a root of 2. This has a root between 1 and 2, and the root between 1 and 2 converges from above to 32 over 27. And with hindsight, what we're actually doing is we're putting weights on the edges. So this, if we think of, this is the way we're thinking in the end. So the chromatic polynomial is the multivariate Tuck polynomial with all weights equal to minus 1. And what we're actually doing is replacing these two minus 1 weights by a different weights. And as we iterate, the weights are converging to a limit, which gives this. So the natural way of looking at this is to look at weights on the edges, which is why this is looking at three connected graphs may be interesting, because it stops this way of cheating by putting weights on the edges.
What stops you from doing the computation by the simple series and parallel laws?
Yes.
At least. Stops.
Yes. But in some sense, the previous theorem is true for weighted graphs with weights on the edges. This, I don't think, would be true for graphs with weights on the edges. Well, this is really an unweighted conjecture. So it says that if we have a three-connected graph, then maybe the chromatic roots behave nicely in the interval 1, 2, and nice means that we have at most one root between roots in 1 alpha. Yeah, so K3, 4 is the three connected graph with the smallest chromatic root between 1 and 2. That's the first part.
What's K3, 4?
So KMN is a complete bipartite graph where we have M vertices on one side and N on the other. And we put all edges in between. So yeah, please shout out questions. So I like people to be involved in the talks. So this is actually the wrong picture. What I wanted was I want N odd. So for N odd, it's going to look like this.
Change your axis.
Sorry?
You're a little bit like Mathematica. You sometimes draw your vertical axis at x equals 1.
Thanks, Alan. This is 0, 1, and I'm a bit carried away there, eh? 32 over 27. So if we look at K3, 4, then we have an odd number of vertices, so the graph looks something like this. 1. And we know at 2, K3, 4 is a bipartite graph, so we can 2-vertex color it. So at 2, the chromatic polynomial is going to be positive. So if we have a bipartite graph with an odd number of vertices, there must be a root between 1 and 2.
Three fails here because
it's not three connected. Yeah. And so K3, 4, I'm guessing, is the one with the smallest root.
But K2, 3 also has a root between 1 and 2.
But it's not three connected.
Right, but might there be some less sophisticated theorem that before you go up to 1.781, you first go up to the root of K23?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, this three connected graphs are nice, but if we want to prove by induction, it's difficult to say in the family of three connected graphs. So in fact, So Feng Ming Dong and Gordon Royal will talk about how this theorem can be extended, and I guess Karsten as well. We'll talk about how this theorem can be extended for certain families of crafts past 32 over 27. So these are families other than adding this three connectivity condition. And the second part of the conjecture says that there are no accumulation points for three connected, no accumulation points of chromatic roots of three connected cubic graphs in the interval 1-2.
Why do you have the cubic then?
Three connected. I don't know. Why do I have cubic? So cubic shouldn't be there. I don't know where that came from. Sorry. I have lots of problems from cutting and pasting. So I guess it was cut and paste from the cubic section. So this cubic is a graph in which all vertices have degree 3, but it shouldn't be there, so don't worry about it for now. So this should be deleted. So Alan talked about planar graphs, so what can we say about the real chromatic roots of planar graphs? So as Alan mentioned, for a planar graph, we can extend our picture a bit, so it is planar. Then Birkhoff and Lewis showed that at 5, the chromatic polynomial is always positive.
I think it follows from their proofs or from Karsten and Douglas's proofs that, in fact, all derivatives are non-negative at 5 and above 5.
Yeah, maybe. I guess so, yeah, because it's just deletion contraction, really, yeah?
What we sometimes call a strong upper zero free interval.
And there's a complementary result in that so Karsten, when he showed that chromatic roots of arbitrary graphs are dense in 32 over 27 infinitely, the graphs it constructs up to 3 are planar. So they show that real chromatic roots of planar graphs are dense in the interval 32 over 27, 3. So there's a gap, eh? There's a gap between 5 and 3, and then there are two conjectures about how that gap should be filled. So Birkhoff and Lewis conjecture that the chromatic polynomials are positive in the interval 4 infinity. So the first theorem should extend down to 4. And the value of 4 is the four-color theorem. And Karsten conjectures that the denseness result should be able to extend up to 4. And Gordon Royal has something to say about that, I guess. But I don't want to steal Gordon's thunder. So can we look at a nicer family of graphs than planar graphs? Well, we can, and what's really nice are plane near triangulations. So a plane triangulation is a graph embedded in the plane in such a way that all faces are triangles. And it's a near triangulation if we allow one face which is not a triangle, which would we typically draw as the outside face. So here's an example of a plane near triangulation. So all faces are triangles except the outer face. And plane triangulations, so Alan mentioned the deletion contraction lemma, which is the chromatic polynomial of J is the chromatic polynomial of J minus A plus the chromatic polynomial of J contract A.
Minus sign.
Minus sign, thank you. I wouldn't have done that 5 years ago. I wouldn't have done that before I met Alan. So plane triangulations are a nice family for using the deletion contraction lemma on, because if we delete an edge, we have another plane near triangulation. And if we contract an edge, well, if we're looking at contraction, we would have a double edge. But for chromatic polynomials, the chromatic polynomial of a, well, when we do, in Alan's terms, parallel reduction, the chromatic polynomial doesn't change. So for chromatic polynomials, we can delete and contract on near triangulations and stay in this family.
You have to work on edges around the outer face.
Yeah, you have to work on edges around the outer face. Yeah. And this is not true for the families of triangulations, because if we have a triangulation and we delete an edge, we do not have a triangulation again. So we have a triangulation. And we delete this edge, it's no longer a triangulation because we have a 4 cycle. We have a face of size 4. So if we want to prove things inductively using deletion contraction, then near triangulations are the family to work with rather than triangulations. And Woodall did this and extended plane near triangulation. So he managed to extend this picture for plane near triangulations. So now the non-zero interval from 1 to 32 over 27 can be extended all the way to 2. And in fact, that's Berghoff and Lowers. So we have no roots between 1 and 2. I guess we have a 0 or 2 because it's not bipartite. Some odd cycles in it. So we can't two colour it.
Do you know, incidentally, if there could be wiggles before you get to two?
No. I guess this goes to Alan's question about the derivatives. Eh?
Yeah. Does Alan know?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's a good question, Norman. So it would be nice to say something about the derivatives of near triangulations between 1 and 2.
I mean, saying something about derivatives seems to be doable for the upper zero free interval. For the internal ones, it may be very hard.
I guess it's okay for negative values, huh? That's kind of trivial.
Yeah, for the lower one also. Yeah. The internal ones.
So then Douglas Woodall showed that there is a symbol 0 at 2, so we cross the origin at 2. And here, I don't really want to go into this, but so I'm assuming my three connected plane my plane near triangulation is 3 connected. If it's 2 connected, then the multiplicity of the root at 0 does pick up the number of hinges. It picks up the number of 2 vertex chords in some sense. And I guess Douglas's main interest was triangulations. So if you want to prove the four-colour theorem, then you only have to prove it for plane triangulations. And for plane triangulations, Douglas showed that the nowhere zero interval, that there is a nowhere zero interval which goes all the way up to 2.54 something, which is the chromatic root of the octahedron.
But for near triangulations, that's not true?
No, it's not true. So actually, Douglas, as I said, deletion contraction is difficult for triangulation. So what Douglas actually did, he looked at a special family of near triangulations and proved this interval up to 2.546.
But for general near triangulations?
For general near triangulations, Douglas didn't look at it, or he doesn't have a result. And maybe that's partly because he's really interested in triangulations. But I have a result for floor polynomials which dualizes to chromatic polynomials and does determine the maximum zero free interval between 2 and it works out what the the right value here is for near triangulations. So we'll say that later. So in order to go all the way up to 2.54, we don't look at near triangulations, we have to restrict to triangulations in which all faces have length 3. And Douglas has a conjecture which I guess inspired my three connected conjecture. So we can get an infinite family of planar triangulations with a root at 2.54. So if we want to go past 2.54, we need some kind of restriction on the graphs that we consider. So what does the octahedron look like?
Draw two triangles and join them.
Yeah, I know. I want to draw it in a special way, though.
Well, that's the way you get the family that has the limit point at 5, 4, 6.
Thank you, Norman. So you draw two triangles.
Draw another one upside down outside that one. No, all round it.
Around it.
upside down. No. Otherwise, it's not going to come out planar. Straight line across the top. Yeah. That's right. Now join each inside vertex to the two nearest.
Oh, that's pretty. Thank you, Norman.
Like that, yeah.
So this has a root at 2.54, but if we add any plane triangulation inside this face and join it up appropriately in a planar fashion, we will get another plane triangulation. So if the inside one is J1, and the outside thing is the octahedron. You have a symbol for the octahedron? You have a name, a symbol for the octahedron? G2?
K222.
K222, okay. Then if the big graph J, we just have the chromatic polynomial of J is the product of J1T times J2T divided by T minus 1. T minus 2. Because, so J1 is this triangle and everything inside, and J2 is this triangle and everything outside. So J2 is the octahedron. And because these two graphs intersect in a complete graph, it goes back to what maybe Norman said earlier about this product formula for a graph which is the union of two subgraphs whose intersection is complete. So this tells us that if, because J2 has a root at 2.54, J will have a root at 2.54. So we get an infinite family of graphs with a root at 2.54. So if we want to move past 2.54, we need to put some kind of restriction on the graph, and the obvious restriction is to, again, bump up the connectivity. So we ask that the plane triangulation be 4 connected. This is not 4 connected because when we delete these 3 vertices, it becomes disconnected. So Douglas conjectures that if we look at 4 connected plane triangulation, then we can go all the way up to the square of the golden ratio, or as Alan likes to tell me, 1 plus the golden ratio. And again, there is this density thing that there are no accumulation points for 4 connected plane triangulate for chromatic roots of 4 connected plane triangulations in the interval 2 tau squared.
And is that again sharp? There's a known graph or family. I mean, it can't be a graph. A known family of graphs with roots
tending to tau squared. Yeah. So this is. That's what it is. It's a double pyramid, eh? That's what I was wanting to think of the octahedron as. So we have a cycle, and we join. So we take a cycle, and we put a vertex inside and join to every vertex on the cycle, and a vertex outside and join to every vertex on the cycle. And if the number of spokes has the right parity, so I guess the octahedron will be the one with four spokes, is that right? So if n is even, then this has a chromatic root tends to tau squared as n tends to infinity. As long as n's even. Makes any sense. So n's the number of vertices, or the number of spokes.
But is this four connected?
Well, can you say a three code? Looks four connected to me.
But the octahedron is one of these?
Yeah, the octahedron is the one with four cycle, I think. Is that not the octahedron?
Sorry, but then I thought you were telling me that the octahedron...
This graph here is two-one.
No, but is the octahedron is not a counterexample to this conjecture?
Oh, at most 1-0, sorry.
Sorry, the first part of the conjecture is at most 1-0, yeah.
Ah, not 0-3. So the octahedron is the typical example. These guys are the typical examples. They're going to have roots.
In some sense, yes.
They're all going to have one root in this interval.
Yeah.
Is there some family that shows that beyond this, you'll get more than one?
I think Douglas has a four-connected substitution, which will give an infinite number of... does that make sense? I think so. I'm not sure, to be honest, but Douglas has a second part of this conjecture about five connected plane triangulations, which extend beyond tau squared. So he seems to want to have five connectivity to go past tau squared. So I wonder what comes next. Ah, bounded degree. So this is Allen's theorem that he mentioned earlier. And if we just restrict to real Z, it gives us a theorem about railroads of chromatic polynomials. It bounds the chromatic roots of graphs of bounded maximum degree. And I guess this is his conjecture about the railroads. If we just restrict the railroads, then we can replace his constant 7.9639. So I should have mentioned Roberto's theorem, but I didn't. So apologies to Roberto. So Roberto has an improvement of this theorem, as Alan said. And then there is this result, which again Alan mentioned, which is a generalization of the Birkhoff-Lewis theorem about a planar graph having no chromatic roots bigger than 5. So if we have a family of graphs which have the property that every simple minor has a vertex of degree at most d, so by a simple minor, so if we have a graph with a triangle, say, and we contract this edge, then we get a multiple edge. This is G contract A. But I don't know whether you can say that. Yeah? Chromatic polynomials are... don't see multiple edges. So if we do a contraction, if we're looking at chromatic polynomials and we do a contraction which creates a multiple edge, we can just delete all copies other than one copy of the edge. So it makes sense to restrict to simple minors. So a minor is a graph that we can get from J by deleting edges or contracting edges or deleting isolated vertices. And this theorem says that if every simple minor has a vertex of degree at most D, then the chromatic polynomial is greater than zero for T greater than D. And the Birkhoff-Lewis theorem for planar graphs follows from this with D equals 5. So every simple planar graph has a vertex of degree at most 5. And planar graphs are closed under deletion and contraction of edges. So if G is a planar graph, then it satisfies these hypotheses with D equals 5. And Alan said in his talk that the proof of this is in some sense analytical, but it seems purely combinatorial to me.
Well, but
deletion contraction.
By analytical, I mean I interpret the variables as real numbers. I mean it works on the chromatic polynomial and imagines evaluating the chromatic polynomial at real numbers t.
Okay.
Analysis in that trivial sense.
I'd like to go on to talk about flow polynomials. So I thought I should give the definition of a nowhere zero flow. So it's an assignment of integers 1. So a nowhere zero ZT flow is an assignment of integers 1, 2, 3 up to t minus 1 to the arcs of a directed. So we start with a graph G and give it a reference orientation, and then we assign flow values 1, 2, 3 up to t minus 1 to the arcs of the directed graph such that conservation of flow holds at every vertex. So the flow in is equal to the flow out modulo t. So we work modulo t. And we can do this in any abelian group. Oh dear. Again, a Cutting and Pearson's gone a bit off. So the with respect to flows, there are conjectures, two famous conjectures and theorems. So the conjectures are due to Tutte, and Tutte conjectured that if G is a bridgeless graph, so in order to have a nowhere zero, so a flow is nowhere zero if it doesn't use zero mod t, and Tutte conjectured that every bridgeless graph has a nowhere zero Z phi flow. And he also conjectured that if there are no edge cuts of size 3, then there is a nowhere zero Z3 flow. And these conjectures have been proved up to a distance of 1. So Seymour showed that every bridgeless graph has a nowhere zero 6 flow, and Jaeger showed that every graph without 3 edge cuts has a nowhere zero Z4 flow. So the conjectures are similar to results about chromatic polynomials of planar graphs. So this is somehow similar to the four-color theorem, except 4 has become 5. And this is similar to a theorem of, I always forget this, this Groschel, is it, Carsten? Grotsch, sorry. This is Grotsch's theorem for planar graphs, that if a planar graph has no cycles of length 3, then it is 3 vertex, then it's 3 vertex colorable. So the flow polynomial of J counts the number of nowhere zero ZT flows. We have a contraction deletion lemma for flow polynomials. So it's like the deletion contraction lemma, but the terms are reversed. And we can use this to deduce that the flow polynomial is indeed a polynomial. And Tutte showed that if we have a connected plane graph, then there is this relationship between its flow polynomial and the chromatic polynomial of its dual. So the behavior of flow polynomials of planar graphs will be identical to the behavior of chromatic polynomials of planar graphs. So a student, a PhD student of Douglas Woodall, came up with a floor polynomial analog of our first theorem. So he showed that the first theorem about chromatic polynomials goes over to floor polynomials. We can say that here we have a t to the minus 1. So the t to the minus 1, if it's for a connected plane graph, if it's not connected, I don't really want to talk about it because I'm not sure what its dual is. But there's a t to the minus 1 coming in. And floor polynomials really behave like chromatic polynomials with a t to the minus c, where c is the number of components. So because we've taken out this factor of t to the minus c, the zero in the chromatic polynomial disappears. The zero at zero in the chromatic polynomial disappears. So now we get a nowhere zero, and we get a zero-free interval going all the way up to from minus infinity to 1. And the multiplicity at 1 is the number of blocks. And then again, we have a nowhere zero three interval going from 1 up to 32 over 27. So the fact that we have similar theorems for both chromatic polynomials and floor polynomials should lead us to think, well, is there a common generalization to matroids? And there is. So after Chris Wakeland proved his theorem, I worked on it with Hugh Edwards and Rob Hirons, and we showed that there is a common extension of both theorems to matroids. And it's kind of surprising that this would hold for all matroids, because as Jeff would tell us, graphs are a kind of a little tiny family of matroids. The fact that the whole thing goes everything goes over to all of matroids is kind of surprising to me. So instead of B would be replaced by the number of connected components of the matroid. And well, what can we say about an upper zero frame? Well, so Karsten's, so this is Karsten's, I don't think Karsten's ever stated this theorem as far as I know. But it follows from his theorem about planar graphs. So because floor polynomials of planar graphs have the same behavior as chromatic polynomials of planar graphs, and Karsten showed that the chromatic roots of planar graphs are dense in 32 over 27 3, it follows that the floor roots of planar graphs are dense in 32 over 27 3. So floor roots of graphs are dense in 32 over 27 3. So what happens after 32 over 27 3? Well, we don't know what happens. So Karsten's conjecture that floor roots of planar graphs are dense in 32 over 27 4 would imply that, sorry, Karsten's conjecture that chromatic roots of planar graphs are dense in 32 over 27 4 would imply that floor roots of planar graphs are dense in 32 over 27 4. So it implies that floor roots of all graphs are dense in 32 over 27 4. And above 4, we have this analog of the Birkhoff-Lewis conjecture, which seems wild to me. But it seems like a natural conjecture. So Tutte conjectures that floor polynomials have no integer roots bigger than or equal to 5. So maybe a safer conjecture would be that floor roots have no real roots. Sorry, floor polynomials have no real roots greater than 5. But Dominic Welch is not shy of making strong conjectures. So he conjectures that actually there are no real roots bigger than 4, which would say that, in some sense, that the four-color theorem is almost true for all graphs.
So this implies both Tutte's flat 5 flow conjecture and the Birkhoff-Lewis conjecture.
Yes.
But goes much further than both.
So the four-color theorem in a dual sense is true for all graphs, almost. So what can we say about this? So I've thought about this conjecture. So it would be nice to know that there was just some finite k, so that if t was bigger than k, then flow polynomials were positive. And up till now, there's no finite k known, which implies this conclusion. So the best we can do is a corollary of the... So this is like the result about minors that we saw before, due to Woodall and Thomason, but it's the dual version. So in fact, the Thomason-Woodall result holds for matroids, but it just uses deletion contraction, so we can extend it to matroids. And because it holds for matroids, we have the dual version for graphs as a special case. So for
What plays the role of minimum vertex degree of a minor? Minimum co-circuit of a simple minor?
Vertex degree corresponds to a cut, and dual would be a cycle. Which is why you've got cycles coming in here.
Yeah, no, but I mean, if you don't dualize it, I guess the point is it, in the matroid, it's co-circuit. And the reason is because I think your theorem actually generalizes even beyond, instead of saying that the co-circuit has to be the edges incident on a vertex, it can be any co-circuit, and that's implicit in a paper of, I believe, Oxley and Wells. It was proved but not stated in that paper.
So the result of Carsten Thomason about minors, which we've seen about for chromatic polynomials, I said, extends to matroids, and as Alan said, Oxley actually proved that it extended to matroids, but he didn't state the theorem that it extended to matroids. He stated a much weaker theorem. So he used the same proof technique actually before Carsten and Woodall to prove a much weaker theorem for matroids, but the exact same proof would prove this stronger statement for matroids. So we look at, for the chromatic polynomial theorem, we looked at simple minors. Here we look at three edge connected minors, which is kind of the dual, in some sense, the dual of simple graphs. So for flow polynomials, if we have a vertex of degree 2, we can contract an edge incident to that vertex of degree 2, and it won't change the flow polynomial. So this is a particular kind of two edge cut, but we can do the same thing for any kind of two-edge cut. So maybe I should have drawn a better picture. If we have a two-edge cut, we can contract one edge in the two-edge cut, and it will not change the flow polynomial. So it makes sense to restrict to three-edge connected minors, and the theorem says that if every three-edge connected minor has a cycle of length at most d, then the chromatic polynomial is positive t greater than d. And it's fairly standard and straightforward to show that every graph of minimum degree 3 has a cycle of length at most twice log to the base 2 n. So as a corollary of this theorem is this upper interval for flow polynomials. And sometimes I think, well, maybe log n is the best, is actually the true answer. So maybe Welch's conjecture is false for all k, and maybe this is actually what's happening. But I don't know. So the next slide, we generalize near triangulation. So the natural, the planar dual of a near triangulation is a near cubic graph. It's a graph in which all vertices have degree 3 apart from perhaps one vertex. And Woodall's theorem about plane triangulations, if we just take the dual version for planar graphs, we get a theorem for flow polynomials of near cubic graphs. of planar cubic graphs. So what I noticed was that actually this dual version holds for all graphs, not just planar graphs. So if we have a near cubic graph, which is not necessarily planar, it has the same properties as Douglas's theorem about chromatic roots of plane near triangulations. So it's non-zero in the interval 1, 2. It has a simple 0, 2. This is the thing that Alan asked about, is if it's, can we say anything about the best interval for near triangulations rather than triangulations? So this is the dual result which holds for all near cubic graphs. So there is this value rho, which is about 2.225, such that floor polynomials of near cubic graphs have no zeros in the interval 2 rho. And a special case of this would be that chromatic polynomials of near triangulations have no zeros in this interval. And this is best possible, and there is a family of graphs which I can construct. I can say I'm not going to get round to the proof at the end. Never mind. So there is a family of near cubic graphs with floor roots tending to rho. And I can construct them in a similar way to the if I can remember what I start with. I think I start with K4. Now how do I want to draw it? So now we have a special vertex X which is allowed to have degree other than 4. And we choose a special edge E, which is going to be rooted. And now for every edge incident to X, which is not E, we do a substitution a bit like the diamond substitution. Maybe it, rather than drawing it here, so the idea is that if we have an edge incident to X, and this is U, then this will go to, so it's a near cubic graph, this vertex has degree 2. So we replace the edge by a 4 cycle, X, and these two edges are these two edges. So I use this operation for both this edge and this edge. So E stays fixed. And then I iterate. So for each of the, so then that will be A, and then be another two edges incident to X. And then I would do the same operation for these two edges. So if we start with K4 and continue in this way, we get a family of near cubic graphs with roots tending to rho. And again, with hindsight, it wasn't even hindsight, I guess, what's happening is we're actually putting some kind of weights on the edges. So one thing I'd like to look at would be to try and get a much simpler multivariate proof of this result. And indeed, any of the results I've said about chromatic polynomials and floor polynomials, there must be some kind of multivariate equivalent. And it would be nice to know if that simplifies the proof or if it's interesting. And so the last result is the analog of Woodall's result about plane triangulations. So if we go from near cubic graphs to cubic graphs, then we can increase. That was a rho become a gamma there. Sorry, this rho should be a gamma, and this rho is a rho. We can increase gamma, to 2.546 for cubic graphs. And again, the way to prove it is not to prove it for cubic graphs, but to prove it for a more restricted family of neocubic graphs. And this would be the analog of Woodall's conjecture, but not just for planar graphs, not just for plane triangulations, but for plane cubic graphs, possibly non-planar cubic graphs. Graphs of mounted degree. So this is what Alan talked about with the Max-Max floor. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to generalize the Max-Max floor to matroids, really. But we'll talk about getting a floor version instead. And maybe I'll say something about matroids. So if we have a graph and some subset of the edges, then we say this subset of the edges is a Z2 cycle. There are lots of Z's in this slide. If each vertex is incident with an even number of edges in the subset. So we can think of it as a subgraph in which each vertex has even degree. Or the edge set of a subgraph in which each vertex has even degree. So cycles are particular examples of Z2 cycles. But Z2 cycles can have vertices of degree 4 or 6 or 0. And so the set of Z2 cycles is closed under symmetric difference, and that means we can think of the set of Z2 cycles as a vector space over Z2. Well, we add two vectors using symmetric difference. And this is called the cycle space of the graph. Now, for each basis B of the cycle space, we let lambda be the maximum size of a Z2 cycle in the basis. And then lambda of G is the minimum of lambda B over all bases for the cycle space. So for example, if we take a plane near triangulation and we take the interior faces, they will give us a basis for the cycle space. And the minimum size of all the Z2 cycles in the basis have size 3 because they're all triangles. So for a plane near triangulation, lambda J will be 3.
Near triangulation you see here is natural because you get a basis by using all faces but 1.
Yes. And for a graph, let's say, we have to use duality here, and maybe I don't want to go into it. But this is the dual version of the lambda that Alan defined as Max-Max floor in his in the previous talk. So we conjecture that there exists a constant C, and I'm treading on Alan's complex territory now, that such for all bridgeless graphs, the floor polynomial evaluated to this complex number z is non-zero outside of the disk of radius constant times lambda. So this would be a dual version of Alan's. It would be an extension of the dual version of. Well, no, I guess it is, in some sense, the dual version of Alan's result about maximum degree. Now, maybe it's difficult to get your head around this parameter lambda when you first say it, but it's linked to the diameter of the graph. So the diameter of a graph is the length of a longest shortest path. So if a graph has diameter d, then any two vertices are joined by a path of length at most d. And this conjecture would imply that for graphs of bounded diameter, the floor polynomial is non-zero outside of a disk of radius constant times the diameter. for some fixed constant, say. So to say that this conjecture would imply this conjecture, we can just take a breadth first search spanning tree, and that would have height at most d. It would have a height d. And then if we take the fundamental basis of the cycle space that we get by adding an edge to this breadth first search tree, so when we add an edge to the tree, we get a unique cycle. And if we take the cycles for all edges which are not on the tree, it gives us a basis for the cycle space. And each cycle will have length at most 2d, I guess. So saying that lambda g is small tells us that d is, no, saying that d is small tells us that lambda j is small. And we've got some experimental evidence for complete graphs for this. So we looked at the complete graphs, the diameter is 1, and it seemed that the roots of the floor polynomials were contained in a very small disk. And maybe Alan could, maybe the conjecture for complete graphs might follow from work that Alan's doing with Alex Scott on what, multivariate Tutte polynomials of complete graphs?
Univariate Tutte polynomials.
Univariate? That's not like you, Alan.
Well, but you see, if you could do multivariate Tutte polynomials of complete graphs, then that's doing multivariate Tutte
polynomials of everything. Yeah. Well, you could bound the things, roots, the weights away from zero. So I've gone over time as usual, and I think I should stop there. Last slide. This is a multivariate version of the 32 over 27 theorem. And if I had time, I would show you that even though it's a horrible statement, it has a much simpler proof than my original graph theoretic theorem. So I have I wrote a survey article several years ago on roots of floor chromatic and floor polynomials, and I meant to bring a big pile of reprints in, but I forgot. But they're back in my room. So if anybody, I'll bring them in tomorrow, and if anybody would like a reprint, I can give them a reprint.
Does it have this?
No, we have a pre print. Which is almost finished, which contains that. Which I guess we could give people, eh?
It's enough that they can reconstruct the proof from what we've written, maybe?
So I'd like to stop there. Thank you.
Formulating those conjectures you had a moment ago in terms of the girth of the graph instead of the lambda and diameter.
Well, girth would be like having conjectures for chromatic polynomials in terms of the minimum degree, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know of any such. Well, there's the one that if you look at the minimum degree of all minors, then you get the Thomason Woodall theorem. And if you look at the girth of all minors, you get the theorem that I had a while back. You get this theorem. But if you take away the restriction that you're looking at all minors, I don't know. You know, if you look at chromatic polynomials of graphs of minimum degree 2, you can't really say much. Thanks.